Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Well, good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday. It's May 5, 10 o'clock on the Eastern Seaboard. And I think this will probably be the most compelling first hour you have ever heard on Westchester on the Level, because the writer that we're going to speak to is none other than Orrin M. Levin-Waldman. He's a socioeconomic research scholar, and the work that he did, the essay that he wrote for this particular discussion, is called or entitled "The Real Consequences of Globalization That Nobody Discusses." It will blow your mind. It is so clear, so lucid from beginning to end. There is no time to even leave the show. So first of all, good morning, Professor. What a pleasure to have you on today.
Good morning.
Well, I am just overwhelmed by the simplicity and yet the complexity of the argument that you make that shows us how we got to this point in our disparate inequality in society, with people earning very, very little and other people earning very, very much. The disparity between the haves and the have-nots is phenomenal. And because of what you study in socioeconomic research, you've known this all along, and yet this has not been very clear or is being shied by a lot of people. Why is that? Is this too in your face with reality?
Well, I think you have a lot of interest there that don't want to be upset by what I'm suggesting. What I'm suggesting would upset the apple cart. But what I'm suggesting is that globalization has brought about a movement towards larger size enterprises as opposed to small businesses. So the country was sort of founded on this idea that small business and competition between small business would be a virtue. But that virtue no longer exists. Small business have been driven into the ground by larger conglomerates and mega corporations. We sort of tolerate them because prices are low as a result, but the end result is they have had a horrible impact on wages because they've created labor monopsonies, and in fact they've driven down wages, they've suppressed wages because of their market power. People don't really realize this, but I also think the other part of the problem is that there's a symmetry between big corporations and big government, and so big government needs big corporations. That's the raison d'etre. If you don't have big corporations, you don't really need big government to a large extent. The big corporations are killing the American worker. At the same time, the response is fine. We'll throw a few programs in the direction of the typical working person. But what the typical working person wants is a decent job that pays a decent wage so that person can be independent. They don't want to be dependent on public programs.
Well, that's what's so interesting. When I look at the new administration, and this is not to trash President Biden, but isn't he going about changing the dynamic of where we are at present in the United States? Sure, there are a lot of people that are very needy, and maybe that needs to be dispensed, but we're not investing in our workers or even retraining them. And I think you point that out in your article as well, your essay, that we expect the worker to jump hoops and constantly redefine themselves and their capacity and work. But at the end of the day, they're not earning any more money. And then why aren't we employing more people to build or rebuild our infrastructure? Why aren't we the ones in government to retrain them? since we're creating this, as you say, Schumpeter's idea of creative destruction?
Well, I mean, I think Biden is following the traditional path laid out during the 1960s, the Great Society programs, and basically will expand the size of government programs to all, and we'll deal with the poor by giving them more money. And it's not necessarily the best approach. It's not well thought out. Clinton sort of modified it a little bit, but he, too, also sort of followed this path of, well, let's see what Wall Street wants, and we'll try to accommodate Wall Street. The programs that he tried to get legislated in terms of worker training and retraining were basically defeated by Republicans in Congress. We really haven't evolved a whole lot. Nobody has really addressed the serious question of, well, if you really want to have a economy that works for everybody, maybe you need to have more competition in the marketplace. So the only way you can have more competition in the marketplace is to break up big corporations. In other words, enforce your antitrust laws so that you don't have this absence of competition. And that's where we have gone wrong for many years. And even in the classical economists like Adam Smith talked about the first function of government, as aside from maintaining a system of justice, was to break up monopolies in order to preserve a competitive marketplace. We seem to have lost sight of that, but we also see the same thing happening in terms of the healthcare market. I mean, this idea that we should just move to big, mega medical practices and medical corporations and then insurance companies, and they will then negotiate and so on and so forth, to be regulated by big government. What the alternative could be is you have more competition in the marketplace for insurance policies, which could drive down premiums. Now, the only way to do that is to end employer-based insurance and then lodge insurance responsibility with the consumer. The consumer then buys his or her own policy on the marketplace. Mm-hmm. If you have more competition, then premiums would have to come down. That could be a costly proposition, but if you, on the other hand, you could raise people's money wages to compensate for that. So, you know, there are ways to address those issues. But right now it seems to be this idea that really what we're talking about is a more corporatist system where you have a relationship between big business, big labor, and big government.
Well, then how come we, from a political perspective, we only hear the Elizabeth Warrens of the world, Ocasio-Cortez, and Bernie Sanders? Are they throwing out epithets such as when they describe the economy in order to build their base, especially people who are poor, but they don't deal with the reality that you point out? That big business, and they've forgotten the fact that antitrust laws need to be actually exercised, and they're not. Why are we going away from that? They're being very dishonest and disingenuous because they're not telling us the truth.
Well, I mean, first of all, I think you're being too generous to AOC. I don't think she understands the economy one way or the other. I mean, it's just playing on people's emotions. Bernie Sanders maybe has a little bit more understanding, but not a whole lot more understanding. He's also playing on people's emotions and basically talking about, don't you see how much you're suffering as a result of big businesses? Just this kind of mentality. Let's make the rich pay for the benefits of the poor, so on and so forth. That's a whole mentality. But, they also, what I think is lost in what's going on here is, here you have the Biden administration comes in with sweeping executive orders. Among the first orders he issued was to kill the Keystone Pipeline. Now, it's true that fossil fuels are on their way out anyway. And for the next 10, 15, 20 years, they'd be gone. So it really is irrelevant. But on the other hand, these are good-paying union jobs. And you basically killed those jobs. You campaign on a platform, I'm going to be for the working person, and I'm also going to stick up for the union member. Now, you just killed any number of union jobs. I think, I suspect largely because these jobs are located in red states. But if you want to have green energy, fine, have a transition process. If you're going to say we're going to transition people from fossil fuels to green energy jobs, then don't kill their jobs first. Start the transition process while they still have these jobs, and make sure that those jobs pay the same rate. Currently they don't. And this is what's missed here. The sense that you want to give out to various interest groups, but you're not really sticking up for the working person.
So how do we get away with this? Society doesn't seem to recognize that, or are they so desperate for whatever money they earn, which is not very much and getting smaller and smaller as we move forward?
I think we're beyond that. I think both political parties are playing to their respective bases right now. The base of the Democratic Party has shifted. It's no longer the party of the working class. It's the party of corporate America, in ways that the Republican Party used to be, but is no longer. The Republican Party is now perceived to be the party of deplorables, and now anything that benefits the deplorables, those who have been displaced from manufacturing jobs, we pay no attention to them. We pay attention to what the corporate interests on Wall Street want to do, and if they want green energy, if they want to kill fossil fuels because they can make more money by doing so, then so be it.
And that was the thing that was really a mind blow. I felt like a bullet was shot right through my brain, and that was what you spoke about, that the big business is driving the fact that what we used to think as a small business owner who knew whether he or she wanted to drive the business in a certain direction and was responsive to the public and paid a good wage, all of a sudden now it's no longer managed by individual interests or business interests that way, but it's all being managed by managers. Explain this.
So, in the old days, or at least when Adam Smith was talking about business firms, he was talking about the proprietary firm, the firm that was owned by individual or a family or something like that. And basically, he wasn't talking about limited liability corporations. I mean, they were starting to come into their own to a certain extent, but they weren't a major force in the economy, at least not in the early 18th century. I should say late 18th century. What's going on here is now, but they were the property owners. Those who owned the firms were property owners. Now what you have is you have mega firms that are limited liability corporations. They're open to shareholders to invest and buy shares, and they're only liable for the shares that they've purchased. So in other words, you buy a share, and if the company goes under, you lose your value of your investment. That's it.
Yes.
It's not like the Lloyd's of London, where if they start to, they lose a lot of money paying out insurance claims, they come back to the owners of the firm and say, okay, pony up the losses. That's a big difference. In other words, Lloyd's of London investors, they did extraordinarily well when they're not paying claims and they're raking in premiums. But they don't do terribly well when they actually have to pay out claims. But limited liability corporation, you just lost what you, the shares that you purchased. Now, what you now have is a new kind of property owner. This is the money, what we call the money manager, the CEO, the CFO. These are people who own large shares in the corporation, largely because they were given these shares as a form of compensation. And they are making decisions on investment decisions for the company that in point of fact, they're making these decisions for the primary purpose of increasing the shareholder value for those who own shares. So, you know,
which
the
they are one,
which they are major shareholders.
Yes.
So they're not thinking in terms of the stakeholders, and the stakeholders would include a larger population, the workers, consumers, and whoever else has a stake in the success of a particular company. So if the company's interests are then served by disinvesting on American soil and relocating your facilities to south of the American border or anywhere else where wage rates are considerably lower, there's no regulation, or tax rates are extremely low, then so be it. You don't have Your goal is no longer to serve the American economy. Your goal is no longer to serve the interests of workers or to even provide good-paying jobs. Your goal is to make money for your shareholders. End of story.
Unbelievable. How did we get to this point? When did we transfer our interests to where they are now? Is that because we started to get these money managers that are the big O's and CEOs and so on and so forth? Because they're making the money, but the public, the worker is making hardly anything.
It's a process which has been evolving over time. It's probably a function of several factors. One, the desire to get out from underneath the nose of labor unions, so you basically lobby for policies that are favorable to business corporations. That's one. Because the tax laws are such that they somehow favor disinvestment. Here Biden wants to raise corporate taxes to 43% from 21%. Yeah. That is going to probably chase companies out of the country.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to talk about tax fairness. Mm-hmm. That's not going to do anybody any good if people lose their jobs. That's not the way the left thinks. They think, well, this is a matter of social justice. This is a matter of punishing the wealthy for their success or whatever it is, the argument they want to make. The truth is, the reason why you will raise corporate taxes is because that's where the money you think is. The problem is if you raise taxes too much, you run the risk of disinvestment, and there will be disinvestment. Because capital can always engage in what's called a capital strike. And even leftist economists have recognized that reality. Not the ones sitting in Congress like AOC, who's not really an economist, but true leftist economists have recognized that possibility and probability. So that's really part of what's going on here. And then the failure to enforce antitrust laws. This has been a process in the making for the last 30, 40, 50 years. I think the only way that you can begin to reverse that is to change the tax laws, but not the way the left wants to change the tax laws. They basically want to raise the rates on the wealthy to, in theory, finance programs for those at the bottom. It's not clear that the money would actually filter on down to the bottom. But if you actually simplified the tax code and got rid of all deductions, and then basically, you have lower tax rates, but you maintain a few tax rates for the sake of progressivity. If you eliminated all the deductions, you would actually probably eliminate a lot of the incentives for corporations to move out of the country.
Amazing. And so what politicians from recognizing this? Is it just simply their lack of education and lack of knowledge of economies and how they really work, and also the antitrust laws, which they're not following up on, whereas they used to? That's how we broke up many, many big companies, and now they've come back. There's a resurgence everywhere you look. Every company's gotten bigger and bigger and bigger than ever before.
It's not a lack of education. I mean, these corporations have well-paid economists who understand this all too well. They basically, but when it comes to lobbying for their interests, they recognize that they can be better served by trying to get changes in the tax code to favor them. But each time you change the tax code to favor a particular interest, you are forced to raise tax rates to pay for that.
Right. Where are we heading if this is a sort of policy that's now in place, that's now become entrenched, and they're driving an equation in a direction in which society is moving forward, whether they want to, screaming or kicking? It's still going there. Can this be corrected? And what does labor have to say about it? Or are they also, you know, literally disheveled by what's happening? Have they been kicking and screaming, or they don't know what to say?
Labor is totally irrelevant at this point, and they certainly don't know what to say, but at the same time, they supported Biden.
Yes.
Arguably, there's no reason to support Trump. Certainly, Trump did nothing for labor's interests. But he certainly didn't bring back factory jobs that he promised to do. But, you know, to basically, it's sort of it's mysterious when you think about it, that unions would then support somebody who, for all intents and purposes, made it clear he was going to eliminate their jobs.
Right. So what is it they thought that they were going to get from all of this? That's what I don't understand. You know, people say one thing and then they do something else that's contrary to is their best interest. And I look at the unions and I'm saying, what the hell have you done?
They get predictability. They get stability. They think they get a nice guy they can work with. They think they get somebody who's going to educate, who's going to invest in education and training, maybe. But I don't think they really thought through the consequences of a vote for Biden. Not that there was a
right
choice here in the minds of many.
I think you're right about that. So has the genie's out of the box, we're never going to be able to reset the equation and go back 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago to a different reality where, you know, people got whatever education they got and they got jobs and they were earning a living, but not to the point of disparity between those that are doing very, very well, but that's because they've changed to serve them, and the poor end or the lower end of the worker is just shot to hell. So, is there any way to change the equation, or is it too late already?
It's not too late, but again, there's hard choices that would have to be made.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that we're capable of making those hard choices because they would run up against any number of entrenched interests.
Right. And are there places that we know of where they're doing a better job in maintaining an equilibrium, or are we one of the worst offenders because maybe so much of the financial world and its edicts emanated here in the United States? Was the problem that the world looked at America for guidance, and evidently everybody's gone awry, including America?
I don't think anybody looks to the U.S. For guidance when it comes to the economy. I think they look to the U.S. for guidance when it comes to, you know, approval for vaccines and drugs and whatnot. That they do. But I don't think at this point people do understand there are clear differences between the U.S. economy and, say, any number of European economies and any number of more well-developed welfare states. But if you take, say, the German economy, you do clearly have more of an investment in workers and more of a commitment to workers and worker rights that you don't necessarily have in the United States. The flip side is, and this is what a number of neoclassical economists like to, the point they like to make, is our tax rates are lower in the United States than they are in Germany. Now, you know, the income tax is probably about the same, but Germany probably has a value-added tax on top of it, which we don't have. So, in other words, you know, you get what you pay for. If you're not willing to pay for certain services, then you will have an economy which does not deliver for the needs of most people. But, you know, you still see the arguments being made, and even in the Wall Street Journal today, how detrimental a $15 an hour minimum wage will be to the economy. But, you know, as though anybody can really live on less than $15 an hour.
Exactly. Well, $15 an hour is not going to – you can't even pay rent even if you spent everything earned in 40 hours. And what about the other aspect of it? Remember the earned income tax credit, which doesn't benefit the worker, but really just benefits underwriting and supporting big business? We're never going to get rid of that either, are we? But then the worker is not making money.
I don't see us getting rid of it at the moment. I mean, if we could replace it with higher wages, that would be a good thing. But there are issues with the EITC. First of all, you have to have children in order to qualify for it. You do have to have you have to be working for it to get it as well. And there have been attempts, by the way, in the past, when Republicans have come to power, to try to scale it back or eliminate or investigate people receiving it, to say they're cheating the government. This was a big thing when Newt Gingrich was Speaker of the House. They launched investigations of EIT recipients saying they were defrauding the government. You know, the same party that decries Biden's call for more funding for the IRS to investigate tax cheats and do audits was willing to do exactly that when it comes to low-income people.
Mm-hmm. Well, is the problem that we have is that we don't really have discussion that reveals all the the pimples and the scars that we've created over many, many years. Is our discourse honest, or are we just reluctant and afraid of the powers that be? It's not like Mr. Bezos is going to come in and smite anybody, but the question is, who's standing for the Bezos of the world and the poor of the world? Do we have anybody in the political realm to do that, or we don't?
Bezos and his ilk are certainly paying lip service to the needs of the poor. They're not doing anything for the poor. In fact, they're doing everything against the poor. There's his attempt to basically squash unionization, his own facilities, is a classic example of that.
Unbelievable. So where do we go from here, or are we stuck where we are now, and it's going to be illogical to even presume that we're going to get out of this? So what does this foretell, or does it? How are we going to even evolve into the new economy, the new ecology? Is it going to get worse than it is presently, where people are going to earn less and less and less? Who's going to be able to buy the cars? you know, we've in our own automotive industry. They're barely making a buck.
We basically have a situation where we have a two-tiered economy. We have those at the very top and those at the very bottom. And we have a dwindling middle class. The middle class was built on manufacturing, and that base is going. It's almost totally gone. It seems to be more existent in red states than it is in blue states, which probably explains much of the divide between red states and blue states, because the economies are vastly different. But wages have been stagnant in real terms for at least four decades now. And in fact, they've if you convert, 1970 wages to $2,020, you'd see that wages have actually decreased in real terms for most American workers. This is something that's also not immediately understood by the typical worker out there. If you talk, what is the impact on the political system, and that's actually something which is also not discussed by most politicians, but the reality is public officials have no real reason to serve the interests of working class people, because for the most part they really don't vote. They basically don't participate in the political system. The more money you have, the more likely you are to participate, the more likely you are to vote. Certainly the poor don't vote. And for all this talk of, allowing immigrants to come in, illegal immigrants to come in, and as a way of boosting the Democratic Party, the data really doesn't support that they would actually vote. They most likely wouldn't vote. So the argument that the Republicans are making is kind of nonsensical in its face.
Yeah, that seems to be the case. That's right. That people are still not voting, even those people that have been here for 30, 40, 50 years, either they haven't been voting either. Is the way the system is? The way the system has evolved from a financial and work perspective, reasons that's keeping people from voting, because there were people who came to the United States 100 years ago, 50 years ago, I don't know how much closer to the present, they did get involved. Different ethnic groups from all over the world came to America, and they were involved, and they are involved. But were people too ignorant, really, to see what was being managed and how their economy was managed and how it would hurt them in the long haul?
Groups didn't vote initially. You still had to become a citizen. You still had to wait your five years, take your citizenship test before you could actually participate in the political process. But at least at the local level, there was more of an interest in getting involved to a certain extent, because you had political machines that actually were the sort of social welfare systems unto themselves. And these political machines, whether it was run by the Italians in one city or the Irish in another city, would basically take care of their own and create opportunities for their own to move up the social ladder, which didn't exist in the old WASPish society where, if you weren't born into the right class, there was no hope for you. So they basically created the opportunities for immigrants who came, and that created a sense of loyalty when it came to voting. So all the machine boss had to do was say, here's a list of people I want you to vote for, and they would do it because their interests were entrenched with that particular machine boss. We don't really have that anymore, at least not as much. We have a different class system, and we have functional fiefdoms of sorts at the local level, but still, people are not going to vote unless they feel that the system is responsive to them. And the poor for a long time have felt that the system is non-responsive to them, so what is the purpose of voting? In other words, from their perspective, I'm poor now, I will be poor tomorrow. It doesn't really matter who I vote for.
Right. And it also costs money to go out and vote, well, and time and everything else. Well, where do we go from here? Things are not, I don't will change. I think they'll only get more difficult for everybody else. And what about the expenditure of money from the, it's actually not helping the poor or the lower half of the nation, and it may actually only be helping big business and corporate structures. They're making money, but the rest of the nation is not. And is it because we're ignorant of these dynamics that we're not voting accordingly to our best interest?
It's hard to say, but certainly those with money are able to manipulate the system and basically divert attention with issues they think the public is concerned about, but
mm-hmm.
which may have no real practical meaning for their lives.
Yeah, I guess evidently. So, well, it looks like it's a dead end. Or do you see any light at the end of the tunnel here? Are we creating an atmosphere of revolution because so many people are being displaced by not earning enough money, barely getting by, and also a lack of investment in human capacity? Are we investing the money that we should in our children so that they, when they get a little bit older, they also have jobs that they can engage in and earn a living? Or is it all over where you now only work for 10 or 15 years and you've got to redo yourself or you're finished? And I guess you can't jump into a different field. You're just going to be on the dole. You'll be in some sort of welfare.
Well, we can't seem to get any consensus on whether we should be investing in people. And we're seeing that with fights over the American Families Act, fights over infrastructure investment,
yeah.
and so on and so forth. What constitutes infrastructure and those kinds of things. And, you know, I think that I don't see these fights ending anytime soon, and I don't see a consensus emerging. I think as long as politics is, you know, I've got to do the exact opposite of what the other party wants, and
mm-hmm.
I've got to undo what my predecessor did because my predecessor was a horrible person. And then
mm-hmm.
what's going to happen is the next administration will come in, which will most likely be from a different party, who will have to do exactly the same thing, undo what the current administration has done with the sweep of a pen. So I don't see, as long as you have this kind of politics, there's really no progress that's possible.
Well, I've come to realize that as well. I'm more in shock now than I was when Trump was around. I knew that there was a great deal of adversarial positions being taken. There was much that was credible, some that wasn't really credible, but it continues to this day now that we have a new president 3 months or 4 months into his administration. Can we keep this harangue for another 3.5 years? I mean, what's the point? And why are we able to actually get to a balancing point? I think that essay that you wrote shows the balance of your mind and shows the balance of a reality that has evolved over time. And I don't see anything in it. Maybe I'm the ignorant one, but I don't see anything in what you wrote and what you inferred and referred to as off kilter. And if people read it, I don't think they can deny the reality of this evolution of our economy and how it's hurt so many people, and yet there are people that benefited from it. So what are we intending to do is we're going to control the masses by this reality, this divide. This is 1984, except it's now 2021.
I think elites do exactly that. They do try to control the masses, and I think we're seeing it. Right now, you have a different... The elites change over time, but you do have elites sort of made up of members of the political class, corporate America, Wall Street types in particular, and Hollywood moguls and academia right now. And they're basically calling the shots in terms of... what kinds of policy decisions are made and what kinds of policy discussions should in fact be had and what the reigning ideology should be. If you're not following their logic, now that the order of the day is to cancel you. So I don't see any real change. If you actually were to dig deep into these issues which I've raised, is you're cutting close to home for a lot of people. It makes them uncomfortable. A lot of these people who are basically talking about aggressive policies, they don't want to be exposed as hypocrites that they are actually making money off of the misfortunes of others. That's exactly what Jeff Bezos is doing. He's making a ton of money. He's actually profited from coronavirus in ways that most people have not. His personal fortune has doubled or tripled as a result of the need for people to buy goods online. Then he says, I'm a great benefactor of wonderful, noble causes. But you're killing the American worker in the process. But nobody pays attention to that because he's a fine, upstanding member of the elite. And he's a progressive and who also happens to own the Washington Post, which publishes the right stories in the right frame of mind and will not publish contrary opinion.
Well, I guess that really what, to me, it seems to boil down to one thing, that the hierarchy that we created millions and millions of years ago continues to this day, and whoever's at the top of the food chain is the one that people listen to and they submit to, and there's very little discussion, even though we all believe there is. But even the two-sided aspects of our political system between Democrats and Republicans and Democrats and a couple of other almost inconsequential parties continues, but it's like the elixir that engages us, but we're just like, it doesn't help us as individuals. You can buy into their dogma, but it does not. Who does it serve except the well-to-do in one means or another? And I thought we were built on everyone getting an opportunity in life. Do we offer that?
I honestly don't think, I mean, for all the talk that we have these days of equality and trying to lift people up and social justice and whatnot. I mean, the reality is that, you know, a ruling class needs a subordinate class that it could actually walk all over. The subordinate class cannot in any way be seen as the equals of the ruling class. While the ruling class are not necessarily the property owners in the classic sense that they were, you know, 200 years ago, the ruling class is made up of those elites, many of whom are money managers. They don't actually own the means of production, as Marx liked to talk about it, but they control the means of production. They are making decisions which affect the value of property. Until we find a way to give workers property rights in their own labor, There's no way that ordinary workers can be the equals of the elites that rule. And, you know, this is the reality that we have. There's always going to be somebody who has to be at the bottom. So to a certain extent, we need a cadre of low-skilled workers.
Mm-hmm.
Because it quite frankly makes us feel good that those of us who went to college or obtained a advanced degree, we can feel that we're better and superior to these people. That's mm-hmm. really how the world works. That's human nature. And to basically talk about equality, I mean, surely I don't think AOC wants real equality. She's a member of Congress. She's part of the ruling elite right now. She's
right.
enjoying her privileged position. And she doesn't want to have to take it away from her.
Yeah. So at the end, when we look at a democracy or like the United States, or we look at the economic concepts that we employ, and we look at Russia, that the communist system, the Marxist system, then we have socialist systems. Has anyone actually done a better job? Or are we all sliding into the same abyss? We're going to end up morphing into one, huh?
All societies have their own hierarchical structures of sorts. Again,
yes.
It's human nature. I mean, I don't think even the old Soviet Union had its hierarchy. You had to be a member of the Communist Party to enjoy the privileged positions, but, you know, these were people who had, there was a hierarchy, and they were superior to people who weren't members of the Communist Party. So certainly if you remember the Communist Party and you went to school and you had education, you had a better lifestyle than those who were working in factories or working in the fields. There's no way around that. All societies have their own respective aristocracies. We can define these aristocracies differently now than we did, 200 years ago. We can define them differently in the United States than we do in other countries. But we now have an aristocracy, which is basically this idea that, okay, it's an aristocracy based on merit, but merit among a certain class of people, those who graduate in certain schools, Ivy League institutions for the most part,
yes.
or the equivalent of Ivy League institutions. This whole idea that you're going to provide free college tuition to general masses, and they're going to go to school for a college degree free, does not mean that they will be the equals of the elites, who will still enjoy their privileged
right.
positions. Because employers looking for talent now will continue to go to graduates of Harvard, Yale, Princeton, before they go
correct.
To the graduates of, Podunk
Student
State
College.
And this
right.
this is the reality that people are not really paying attention to. Here you're diverting attention. We're talking about now we want equity in teaching of math, for example. It's not fair to disadvantaged groups if you correct them and say when they make a mistake, when 2 + 2 does not equal 4, which is the correct answer, it could equal 5 or 6. Now, the reality is, again, big major firms are not going to hire people who aren't trained in math from the right institutions. And the reality is you wouldn't want to be flying on a plane that was designed by somebody who didn't understand basic math.
Correct. Unbelievable. So we didn't get here where we are present soon, did we? Or did we make a little bit of a whimper here and there, but at the end it was, and now we are where we are at present. Is the economy growing? Maybe not from a financial perspective, but just growing in different directions for the benefit of the of new business concepts. Is it ecology where all the money is going to come from, What are we going to do about all the people in the older economies? How long is it going to take to electrify everything? Will it work? There's just so much on the table. And what do we do with all the displaced workers?
We haven't figured that out, but it's basically going to take a generation to replace all these workers, and then at some point the current workers will be replaced by a different generation where new technological advances will render them obsolete as well.
Correct.
We don't really have a way of addressing those transitions. As I suggested
before. Is that
before,
because the intent is not to address those issues, is it? It's in order to maintain a lower class, however you define them, so that they're always on the dole one way or the other and never being able to subsist?
I think the intent is not to address them because we don't want to be told that we're making a mistake in how we went about this. We may feel embarrassed that we actually made a policy decision that actually hurt people. As I suggested, I think the way that Biden went about these executive orders by canceling jobs before actually having a system in place to actually transition these people to other kinds of jobs. In other words, basically, he allowed the destructive part to take place before the creative part was launched. Mm-hmm. So I think this is part of the problem. There's this idea that you do need people. On the one hand, you want to create high-paying jobs, but you also need a vast army of unemployed, so industrial reserve army of labor, as it's called, in order to have a check on how high wages can go.
Mm-hmm. Unbelievable. So I guess the discussion, at least from the discussion that you bring forward, is going to evolve, but there is no fulcrum, there is no engagement in this discussion, or are there very small pockets of discussion like this anywhere in the country? Are there like little nuggets of political parties trying to say, hey, this is not working and that's not working, or are the naysayers the deplorables? In every conceivable manner.
Well, the naysayers are deplorables right now. And I guess you could argue that the socialists and the American Worker Parties and that crew, they're there to point out the deficiencies of the system and basically blame capitalists for the problems. But they don't really have a solution in place that replaces the capitalist system as we've known it. And they basically haven't figured out that what really is needed is a consensus, not necessarily this idea that we steamroll the existing order and basically for in the name of those people at the bottom, because I don't really think they care a whit about the people at the bottom. They just care about themselves.
And the way they care for themselves is really just to, say one thing, but then they still accept the money and the funding from the big boys and the big girls who have the capacity to underwrite their campaigns. Is that logical?
That's logical. That's what they do. And that's why a lot of, again, if Biden is talking about a 43% tax rate for corporate America, he knows, they all know, that no corporation is going to be paying 43% taxes.
Right.
They'll have enough deductions to offset that. And what you're going to do, and the reason why you have to raise the corporate tax rate, is you want to spend, in name, you want to spend money on a variety of new social programs and other public spending ventures. But the other thing that you want to do is you're going to give tax credits to people who are going to make green energy investments. So in other words, you know, basically, sure. This is what you're doing with the tax code as part of social engineering. The tax code really shouldn't be about social engineering, but you're going to cost a lot of people jobs in the process without a real transition place for these people to move from one area of activity to another area of activity.
Unbelievable. It's like a shot across the bow. Well, it is a reality. I hope I was just reading your essay advised me, even though I haven't figured out how to do this, but this is probably the most compelling piece I've read ever because it speaks to so many issues on so many levels of complexity. I've got to be able to keep this article up all the time so people can read it, those that want. But I think it's an education, that's for sure. Well, Professor, as usual, always a pleasure to speak to you. I'm sorry it's taken me so long to get back on the wagon, but it looks like things are getting better for me, so I should be at least being able to engage in conversation with you. So let me let you go and thank you again, and then read and then just tell the public all the work that you've done in books and so on and so forth. So thanks again. All the best to you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, there we have it, folks, none other than Orrin M. Bevin-Waldman. He is the socioeconomic research scholar. Let me just quickly look. Did I put this here? This article, The Real Consequences of Globalization That Nobody Discusses, by Orrin M. Levin-Waldman, is his latest essay. I hope you'll consider reading it. It is absolutely brilliant, even if I say so. And just so you're aware, he's written quite a few works, books. He's the author of Restoring the Middle Class Through Wage Policy, is Arguments for a Middle Class, published by Palgrave, Palgrave, and it's available. Understanding Public Policy in the United States. This was published by Top Hat, T-O-P-H-A-T, and speaks to the issues that we discussed today. I got introduced to him for the first time by reading his work called The Minimum Wage, a Reference Handbook. This one's published by ABC, that's American Broadcasting Corporation, ABC-CLIO. I don't know what CLIO stands for, but it's an ABC affiliate. So ABC-CLIO, this is a book in paperback now, Wage Policy, Income Distribution, and Democratic Theory, again by Orrin M. Levin-Waldman, a brilliant work. And then he evolved his other work, previous book, now another one called The Case of the Minimum Wage, Competing Policy Models. This one published by the State University of New York Press, so SUNY Press. And you could find his work and his concepts and his theories, and and if you want to be educated, I think you'll find relevance in what he speaks to, and you can read it all on his own website. Labor Econ is the name of it. It's called, so you can reach it by going to the website, www.econlabor.com. So econlabor.com. And you can also direct mail to him by addressing it to olevinwaldman@gmail.com. So again, the email is olevinwaldman@gmail.com. So, again, his website, www.econlabor.com. just brilliant, brilliant mind, one of the probably the most prominent minds I have ever encountered in my life. He gets better and better every second week when he writes another essay. And but again, one of the things that is evident, a lot of people would be embarrassed by so much that he reveals, and yet so many of us appreciate the revelation because we may not have gotten it on our own, which includes me. So let's move on to our next guest. He's already on the line. I love it. Good morning, Mr. Guest. So this is none other than Michael Nuko. How are you, sir?
Good morning, Hezzy. How are you?
A pleasure. I am doing much better now that I'm talking to you. I had a very invigorating first hour, but there's so much that needs to be discussed. And the reality is that there are some people who believe they're being bailed out, and in reality, there are some people, such as landlords, that are being trapped. How did we get to this point where we keep claiming protecting the poor or those that can't afford to pay, and yet we're creating havoc for those people who had the money to invest in buildings and homes and residences for people, and you're not getting paid? How does that balance out in any way, shape, or form? Are you the rich people that we are supposed to hate? Are we supposed to love you because you're giving us a place to live? And we have to pay rent, of course.
Sure, sure.
Or are we moving to the point where everything will be free?
Right.
How do you live if everything is free on your? I got to hear. I don't get it.
Right, right. No, it's a very unfortunate situation, Hezzy. I think society has painted a picture that being a landlord is the equivalent of Donald Trump, which is not the case. You know,
No. You
look around the nation, specifically in New York. There's all kinds of real estate. Everything is real estate. I've mentioned this a year ago when you and I spoke on your last podcast,
right,
that, you know, some folks tend to miss the big picture here. If you live in an apartment, if you live in a home, if you work in an office building, if you work in a hospital, if you attend a sporting event at a venue like Madison Square Garden, this is all real estate. You know, our retail sector is all real estate. So all these pieces of real estate has to be maintained, right? There's bills that come along
right.
with the territory, such as property taxes and water and insurance and providing heat and air conditioning, whatever the case may be. These things need to be maintained. So I think people lose sight of that, and they want to paint the picture that the landlord is just a rich fat, you know, pig smoking a cigar, drinking a scotch. I mean, that's not what it is. So there are a tremendous amount of mom and pop shop type families that are no different than owning a local pizzeria or owning a local hardware store or a nail salon or whatever the case may be. They may own a small property that has two or three apartments or maybe a little bit bigger, and they rely on that rental income in order to pay the bills, to operate the property, to provide quality housing, to provide the services that they are required to provide, and they are entitled, just like everyone else, to have a profit in order to then pay for food and expenditures and to be able to raise a family and live a normal life. I mean, that's America.
But I don't know if people anymore. Do people realize that everything emanates from our system of government construct of our society, and it is all based on property? So if you don't, your employees, they starve, and they can't
right.
pay. They can't afford to pay their rent. If you
sure.
don't pay your staff, then the value of the building will deteriorate, and then people won't even be able to live in there if it deteriorates sufficiently, where it's going to be regarded as just a place where people can't live. It's not clean. 100%. It's falling apart. You know.
Sure.
So how did we get to this place? I mean, there may have been a time when we wanted to satisfy the people who didn't have the means. They were living on such a fine edge of surviving or collapsing that there was a thought that they could help them out. But when does this subsidy of not paying the landlords, whether they own Madison Square Garden or they own a small apartment that they rent out, when is this mm-hmm. going to stop? Because can we afford to keep doing this for everything is for free? And a lot of people think the rent moratorium means it's a freebie.
Correct. And you know, it's not a rent moratorium. That's the sort of image that society is painting. It is an eviction moratorium. Huh. It's an eviction moratorium. That's the irony of it.
That's correct.
You know,
thank you for telling me that, because you're right.
You turn on the TV and everyone is campaigning free rent. Look, I deal with tenants all day long. That is my entire career. I have some of the best relationships with tenants. When we call and we are looking for rent payments that are unpaid, we are so connected with our tenants that we know a lot of their situations. Oh, you know, this one, maybe they're going to get paid in the middle of the month, or this person, you know, is suffering some hardship because they got laid off. Whatever the case may mm-hmm. be, we are directly related to them. But as you said previously, Hezzy, when rental income is not paid, then landlords cannot pay their bills. Now, everyone seems to forget, sure. when landlords pay their bills, that means there's someone or some vendor, or there's a municipal like paying property tax or water. Someone's on the other side receiving that money. And therefore, when they receive that money once again goes out again. So it's a domino effect. So when you pay bills, that means that someone is receiving money. So that means someone is employed. When you have to perform a repair, that means you have to hire a trade, whether it's an electrician or a plumber. That person mm-hmm. has employees. That person has bills. That person may drive a vehicle that needs repairs that goes to a mechanic to fix. So the domino effect, it just keeps swinging in circles. When you stop the flow of income and you don't think about how to handle the other side of it, then you're collapsing the economy.
Let me take the pills and then, because I'm on radio. Okay. Forgive me for that interruption. So, Mr. Nuko, the thing
yes.
is, as well, because I'm in a hospital room and I keep walking in and out. So the question I have then is, do we realize if the flow of money does not keep on moving from one place to the other, that, for example, a city like Yonkers where the domicile of your business resides.
Correct.
If you don't pay your taxes, the city doesn't get paid. If the city doesn't get paid, well, nothing will function. And all the programs that this city does, even if it means cleaning the street, police, employing
sure.
People in any field of endeavor, including employing people in government, including paying the salaries of our mayors and our city council people and our
sure.
garbage collectors and so on,
sure.
that's all going to come to a halt. So
absolutely.
Who created this bullshit story that says we've got to keep on doing what we're doing and helping people, when in reality we may help them with not having to pay rent, but when the city can't pay for services, they're going to lose out there, and they won't be able to make it up. So
sure.
Who's buying into this story?
I don't know, because you know the irony is that the last time that I checked, Hezzy, our government officials, maybe the mayor and our governor and whoever it is that's employed, I don't think any of their salaries has been interrupted. I don't think that
not at all.
I don't think the last time I turned on the news, I haven't heard the government trying to come down on doctors, lawyers, nurses, Amazon, Microsoft, Apple, nurses. How come no one's salaries is being affected? But landlords, we're the rich. We're all Donald Trump. That is unfair. It's painting a very inappropriate image of the industry. When in fact, as you said, when the flow of monies are circulating through the economy, everyone benefits.
Yeah.
When a landlord has to repair or replace a roof, people will benefit. Not only do the tenants benefit because now you're improving their quality of housing, but you're employing people to then perform those repairs. So, this whole avenue of conversations, unfortunately, is not a result of COVID. This has all stemmed from the Rent Reform Act in June of 2019. That's where this really started. You start from the top, and then we could work our way through all these situations. But when we, as an industry, connected with politicians, when we connected with politicians like Stuart Cousins and Brian Kavanaugh,
yes,
and really urged them and said, guys, what you're proposing here by that Rent Reform Act, which essentially, if our viewers recall, they eliminated avenues to raise rents. Okay, so they stopped the ability for landlords to increase their rental income. They changed the laws around. They also stopped the ability to perform improvements to the property, like major capital improvements, which consists of like replacing a roof or a boiler or performing a renovation to the apartment.
Mm-hmm.
They stopped all of that, and they fine-tuned it very, very, very poorly, to the extent that now landlords cannot rely on this income stream to then perform repairs to the building. But yet, the other side of the equation, which is your expenses like property taxes and water and insurance and your utilities, they have no idea what rent stabilization is. They don't know. They don't care. But when they have to pose an increase on your expenditures, they go ahead and do it because, once again, they assume that you're collecting rent. Everybody has this assumption that, rental income is coming in, and therefore we could sustain having increases in expenditures. But going back to the core, we told Stuart Cousins, and I hope she's listening, Hezzy, because she campaigned on the fact with her analyses that, you landlords are all collecting your rent 100% on the dollar, which is nonsense. And she also made a very, very, very strong claim that in the event that a landlord may have a vacant unit open up, and mind you, this is New York, so our properties are all 100-plus years old for the most part. So when you have an apartment that opens up from, let's say, a tenant that may have resided there for 30 years or so, who in fact has a unit that is old, that requires renovation, they came up with their analysis that $15,000 is more than enough to perform that renovation. Whether you have a one-bedroom, two-bedroom, three-bedroom, four-bedroom, one-bath, two-bath, doesn't matter. $15,000 was determined to be the appropriate amount of money to perform that renovation. Now, I spoke with my brother this morning, George Nuko, who's an engineer, and he said, Mike, don't forget. He goes, back in the early 1900s, tenants did not have computers and microwaves and all this electronic devices. So guess what happens now? You have a unit that opens up that was occupied for 10, 20, 30 years, whatever the case may be. Don't we all think that perhaps – yeah. Don't you think? I mean, and somehow $15,000 is sufficient, right? So when this morning I turned on the news and there was a building on Park Avenue in the Bronx that was in a fire. Terrible fire.
Yeah.
God knows if folks have gotten hurt. I have no idea. But I could bet some money that perhaps, you know, there was a lot of electric devices going on in the unit and circuit breakers were popping, and then next thing you know, you have a fire, right? I mean, and if that wasn't the case there, are we going to be naive to think that that's not going to be the case in other situations?
Correct.
So if Stuart Cousins is listening, we are asking her to please provide us with the contractor that will perform a renovation for $15,000, because I represent a whole lot of landlords, and we all would like to hire that contractor. Perhaps it's Stuart Cousins' own company. Perhaps she could go public with this and make a ton of money by charging $15,000 to renovate an apartment, because it simply does not work. If you do some simple analysis work and you go online and you price out a kitchen cabinetry and tiles from Home Depots and whatnot online, you will soon find that the material alone could easily get you there. Never mind the labor, and that's
absolutely,
and we're,
yeah, exactly.
You know, so that's a major issue, unfortunately.
Well, I guess
that's,
well, I guess
yeah.
to people like Andrea Stewart Cousins, who's the Senate leader,
right.
in the New York State government, what she's no different than other people as well in government, and it
sure.
just seems that by placating those people who were living on the margins between barely making, scraping by and not surviving. I don't know what they think they're doing, because they're not helping them. And at the same time, they're not helping them, but they probably think they're going to get their vote somewhere along the line. But people who are barely making it by are not going out to vote. So
that's right.
Who are they trying to serve with this political BS? Because this whole system is falling apart. And unfortunately, thanks to you, at least, maybe another way, I don't know another way, to reset the economic structure of translating payment from one place to another, so that everybody is making a living. And it is, like you said, all based on real estate. If it's not going to be based on real estate, what's it going to be based on? Do we know? Is there any other country anywhere in the world that has a system other than real estate? It's all real estate. Russia, China, the United States, South America. Where is it not real estate? So
100%.
What's the problem? Where is the disconnect?
You know, the unfortunate truth, Hezzy, is that it's easy to paint a picture that being a landlord is the equivalent of Donald Trump. It's easy for a politician to go on the air or say, hey, you know, we the people, we're going to make this rent free for you because this is what it should be, as opposed to educating our people. We should educate the people and say, hey, look, you know, we made a mistake with this rent reform law. We need these avenues in place. And by the way, New York is one of the only few states that has any type of regulation on our rent and housing market. Other areas like Connecticut, and if you go to other states, there is nothing. You just simply go and you rent. I mean, look, if I have an apartment that is a one-bedroom, if the market states that the maximum amount of rent that I could charge for this one-bedroom apartment is $1,500. Am I going to be able to successfully charge $3,000? No. It's absolutely impossible, because markets will drive what the price is supposed to be. If you have a home that you want to list for sale, you will contact your local realtor and say, hey, realtor, what is my house worth? Or maybe even an appraiser, whatever the case may be. You have the unusual home on the block, if your home is twice the size of the other homes, those other homes, because they average out to be, let's say, of a lower value, they are going to bring your value down, because that is what market does. That's what's called a sales comp analysis, a comparable analysis. So I go back to this
right.
point here that, you know, we have this regulation for our industry when in fact it was never necessary to begin with. But let's put that aside. They are out there saying, hey, look, you know, we're here to help protect you, the people. But when you sabotage the flow of or the ability for landlords to collect rental income and raise their rent, then you're crippling the ability for them to perform repairs. Landlords want
well,
to
also
fix their
when
buildings.
Costs rise, if you
sure.
can't pay the superintendent of your building and other people as well with different expertise that you require in the building, whether it be an elevator operator or someone who takes care of the boilers or any of those
sure.
things, don't they that they don't also they can't they may not you may not even have enough money eventually. It's not like you've got an empty bank a full bank account when you haven't been getting paid for almost a year.
Sure.
Where
I mean that's
come from? How do you pay?
We're expected to navigate through hard times. I mean, as sarcastic as this may sound, we're supposed to squeeze water out of a rock. I mean, you know, here you are. We have
sounds
a situation right
biblical.
Now where
I don't know if you could do this anymore. I think it happened
well, you,
many, many millennia ago.
I mean, look at it. You know, you have an eviction moratorium that was immediately
yeah.
put into place. It's been in place for about 15 months now. As you know, they just
yeah.
extended the eviction moratorium to the end of August. Okay, so that's going to basically put us at a year. Now, there's a series of issues here. You have tenants that are legitimately suffering financial hardship, and okay, great. You know, we have to help those people, right? Because we're not we're all humane. We're not going to put families and children out on the street, even if the landlord, as you know, was a crazy landlord and he really wanted to. The courts simply would just not do it. It doesn't work that way. Secondly,
yeah.
you have tenants that may not have suffered as much financial hardship as the average person. Maybe they were laid off for a little while, put back on
right.
the job. They may have received stimulus money. They may have received unemployment. And my point is that perhaps they had the means of paying their rent. Maybe not 100%, but they could have paid a portion of it, but chose not to. And then you had people that could pay their rent and chose not to. And why did those two scenarios chose not to? Is because the media is saying free rent. The folks are campaigning saying free rent. I have yet to see Governor Cuomo or any politician go on the news and say, hey, wait a minute, guys, time out. This is an eviction moratorium, not a rent moratorium. You guys must pay your rent. And here's the issue. Not everyone has graduated with a master's degree in mathematics and financial planning. So there are tons of people that may have not the best of skills managing their money. So where you have a tenant that could have paid their rent but chose not to, what's to say that they were actually saving the money on the side until they were told to pay their rent? Perhaps they decided to spend it on other items that were of more importance to them than paying their rent. So now, when the courts do open, what is their excuse going to be when the judge goes down the checklist and say, okay, were you laid off? Yes or no? You know, no, or I had, you know, reduced hours, whatever. Did you receive stimulus money? Yes, I did. Did you apply for the COVID relief program? I did apply. Did you get accepted? No, I was rejected. Why? Because I didn't qualify. Well, then where's your rent? I don't have it. I thought it was free.
Exactly.
So,
do you actually believe that could be an excuse?
100%.
I guess you're in fear that will be the excuse that the judges will accept. And then I guess like at that point you could say, well, okay, fine, we can't squeeze water out of a rock. Is that going to be an excuse? How are you ever going to get paid? How are the workers that work for you going to get paid? How are you going to buy new equipment? How are you going to pay taxes in the city where you reside, where you do your business? I don't get it. I'm in shock.
It's horrible. You know, Hezzy, let's also keep in mind that due to COVID, the ability to obtain certain products like appliances, the cost of wood, even if you go to Home Depot, these things have went through
wood
the roof.
Went through the roof.
And everybody loves the good old fashioned COVID excuse. Oh, well, we can't do this because of COVID, or the prices has gone up because of COVID, right? So expenses have gotten up, and here we are as landlords, you know, going back to trying to squeeze water out of a rock. We're sitting here trying to navigate, and like you said, we have to pay our bills. If we don't pay our electric,
maybe the problem is that wood has no voice. They don't vote, and if we decide to knock, and I think wood went up like 3,000%, if I remember correctly, but I think I only heard about it yesterday. And
right.
All I know is that I heard also that, for example, toilet paper, maybe at one time toilet paper, they had 1,000 sheets per roll. They've reduced it by maybe 20%, but they still charge you the same amount of money, which means
Absolutely.
That there's a greater profit by spending less on the product. But the consumer is paying for it. Nobody's screaming bloody murder about that. And so how come it's okay to take money out of your pocket and not pay you, even if it were at a reduced rate, so that you could cover your expenses? So how
and
come
you
it's
know,
okay for Kleenex and for Home Depot when they sell the wood, or anybody else? I'm not pulling them out of the hat to demonize them, but everybody in facial tissue and any other paper product is charging more. Why?
Yes, you know. Look,
why is that permitted by law?
And they can be price gouging you, right?
Yeah, but why is it permitted?
It should not be.
I don't.
Why is our local?
I would call up Andrea Stewart Cousins and tell her to get her act together and push it across the board. If you want to have a moratorium on evictions, then have a moratorium on everything else.
On expenses, absolutely. Let's be fair. Let's be fair to the process. Why is our local municipals charging you a late fee if you cannot pay your tax or water? They understand what's going on. They're charging.
That money should come to you if they haven't paid their rent.
Right.
So increasing the cost?
They haven't offered any programs where, you know, we're going to lower your taxes or whatnot, you know, we're going to give you some kind of credit, because we understand that these taxes and water charges are for real estate. This is all for real estate.
Yeah.
You know, we're not charging property tax and water on a vehicle. This is real estate. So
when
we go back to the top and we say, hey, these landlords are not collecting their rental income, but yet somehow we have to figure out how to pay our bills. Somehow we have to figure out how to continue to maintain quality housing and provide services to these tenants, because they're entitled. And that's our duty. That's our job. But how are we supposed to do our job if the income isn't there? It's very frustrating, Hezzy, to understand that we have politicians that are out there doing public work. Their job is to service our residents, our people. And how are you servicing them when you're just going to tell them what they want to hear, as opposed to educating them and making our society better? Because
that's the atrocity of the BS that comes out of politicians who either don't understand the complexity of it all. I may not understand all the complexities that you understand, but that's your field, and I've got my field. But the bottom line is, I understand enough, because I'm an educated individual, to understand the relationship between all of this. So if you're going to not allow landlords to raise their or to get paid, not saying they're going to raise their fees, but just to get paid what they were supposed to get paid from a year or two ago, then I don't know how anything else is going to function. How is Andrea Stewart Cousins going to pay her own fee as a Senate leader?
Last I checked, her salary didn't change. You know, and I'm sure if her if her salary was reduced by 25% or 30%, I'm sure she would find significant.
Or how about if nobody paid her at all? Like, you're not getting paid.
Right.
How about we stop
right.
paying all these people who are supposed to be there to protect us, of which you are part of what they're supposed to protect? Because
yes.
if they don't protect you, they don't protect themselves. But maybe they haven't figured that out, because by law, they can pay themselves because they choose to. You cannot collect the money, do you, because they choose to do that. Because
that is correct.
It somehow satisfies the litany that we're supposed to hear. But if you would explain it to everybody, not you personally, but everybody would be explained how this system works, then
yes.
either they come up with a new system that does work, or they're going
right.
to have to come up with a better plan. I say, get rid of all the salaries. If you can't afford to pay taxes to the city of Yonkers, all those people employed should be out. They should come to work, but they shouldn't
right.
get paid a dime, not one penny.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And that goes,
you know,
I recall
talking to Stuart Cousins, mm-hmm. and I tried to give her an analogy. I said, you know, we're operating
yes.
old buildings. Our buildings are old,
right.
and, you know, they're all built in the early 1900s, as you know. So when repairs
right.
happen, you must continue to do it. I said, you know, hey, imagine driving a used car. What are you going to do
yeah.
when your brakes on your car go bad?
So,
are you not going to fix them? Yeah. Are you not going to change your tires when they are losing the rubber thread and you have to drive through snow
mm-hmm.
and bad weather conditions? So that's what you're expecting us to do with our properties, right? So when these poor, you know, tenants that are suffering, you know, poor quality housing, and they're complaining, all of a sudden the landlords are bad people now, right? But you put the mechanics in place to not only eliminate the ability to raise rent, you've also eliminated the incentive to repair buildings, because there are other factors like the $15,000 renovation cap, the winding down of the major capital improvement incentives. They abolished
mm-hmm.
all of that stuff. And then to add
mm-hmm.
insult to injury, we have COVID. And so now Stuart Cousins and all our politicians are going to say, oh, well, this is because of COVID. No, the industry was at a rapid decline because of our deteriorating assets and our inability to fix them. And then COVID came, and now we have the eviction moratorium. But yet, you know, Hezzy, I'm not sure if you know, you could go to Playland. Playland is opening. You could go take your children
yeah.
and go there and your families, and you could enjoy, you know, the bars and restaurants are opening. Life is getting back to normal. But the eviction moratorium, we're going to continue that because, you know, the
mm-hmm.
landlords will figure it out. They'll pay their bills somehow. And if they lose the property or if they have to pay late fees to our city, that's okay.
Right.
If they can't pay their mortgage and the lender commences a foreclosure proceeding against them, that's okay, because somehow the landlords will figure it out. That's
well,
it,
I don't want
the
to
irony
make
of
question
it is,
based
sure
the irony is disgusting. The question is like whether you speak to Andrea Stewart Cousins or anybody else in government, or whether you speak to our mayor or the governor. The big question is, what is their excuse for taking out their anger or their wanting to look good before the larger population? Because there are more people in need of, of being saved because they're not earning money. They could be the guy that works for you in the elevator.
Correct.
Or the guy
Correct.
That cleans up your whatever, delivers whatever you need for the building.
Let's think about it for a second. Let's think about it for a hot second. Madison Square Garden,
yeah.
how many people do they employ? Hospitals, how many people do they employ?
Yeah.
You know, this is real estate, right? This is real estate. You need to have these properties maintained. You know, when it snows and you have to hire the landscaper to come and, you know, snowplow the driveway and throw down salt or cut the grass,
real estate,
whatever it may be.
Are real estate people getting funding like they gave to Metro North? They gave them, what, $38.5 billion investment so they could do whatever they need to keep the equipment functioning? Because once it breaks, you need new equipment altogether. So how come they know what to do with that, but they don't know what to do with landlords?
It's, you know, they are assuming that the finances are there, that they're endless, that, you know, your local mom and pop shop, yeah, you're sitting on a war chest of cash. You know, when you have a property and you are relying on the rental income to pay the bills, to maintain the property, and whatever is left over is going to be taken home to put food on your table, send your children to school, and live a life. You start stripping the top portion, which is the income. That's the first thing that comes into the analysis mm-hmm. here. And then everything else deteriorates, right? And to your point, you know, there are so many people that rely on jobs from landlords. They may not realize it, but it's all real estate. It's a very unfortunate situation that we're in. I really wish that politicians could educate our people, let them know that we need to work together.
You're making a big mistake if you think politicians are going to educate the people. The best thing you can ever do, and I mean this seriously, not just in your world, but in every world, if the people who are impacted don't say a word, or if you want to talk to whoever the man is or the woman is, you're going to talk to a wall, because they're going to yes you to death, and then they're going to screw you at the other side of it. And you're going to say, I wonder why, and that's the problem. We have people who are afraid to open their mouth and give expression to the reality. And the
reality what's interesting?
Is different than the make-believe.
What's interesting, Hezzy, is that you could have an apartment building that has, let's say 100 apartments. You may have a landlord that could be represented by 10 people owning that one building.
Mm-hmm.
So you have 10 people on the landlord side. That 100 units could represent thousands of people. So there you go. Mm-hmm. It's just simple math. So a politician will say, well, wait a minute. Why am I going to try to work on educating these thousands of people when I could just tell them what they want to hear, get their votes, and I'm going to maintain my political career and advance myself? Because that's all that it is, you know, as opposed to doing the right thing. I mean, I've received phone calls, and I'm not going to name names, but I've received phone calls from politicians who said, hey, Mike, you know, what do you think about this? You know, I know it's not right, but, you know, my party is predominantly voting this way, and my vote really won't do anything anyhow. And I say, hey, stop, time out. You know, the last I checked, you took political office to make a change. And if that's what your intent was, then you should stand up and educate these people, because, you know, you know the right or wrong of that scenario. And unfortunately, people fall victim to, you know, let me just get my votes in, and I'm just going to say what they want to hear, and here we go again. And going back to what I was saying before with respect to the rent reform law of June of 2019, it was followed by the Rent Guidelines Board that immediately followed, and they issued 0-0 rental increase. So you had the rent reform law that, you know, that collapsed avenues to raise rent, followed by the annual rent increases that are offered for tenants in rent stabilized apartments, which represents a whole lot of our tenant base in New York. So if a tenant,
you know what, but you're repeating stuff that should have been told a year ago or 2 years ago or 3 years ago, but again, nobody is willing to talk. And you know what? If somebody is willing to speak up and show the reality and the dysfunction of the legislation that's being passed in order to buy favor with supposed voters who may not even bother to vote, then you really have to question, what is it that they're doing in government? And quite often the promise to get elected is always been found to be deficient once people get into office. Promises, 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 you know, and they don't deliver. And yet we vote these people back in over and over and over again, And the reason that happens is because nobody knows the truth.
Right.
And that's a failing of our system. But it's no different in Russia or in Sweden or in wherever you want to look. You know, it's the same all over. But people, we at least still live in a society where you can respond to issues that are going awry. But evidently, when the top man or the top lady say this is the way it's going to be, everybody pulls their disgust and say nothing. And that's
right.
Got to change. And if it doesn't, then you're going to find, and you know what's really interesting? You, whether you call Trump is a little operation that got started by his father. And so
right.
This is like a second generation. Your family and how you got in didn't start so easy. You were never in real estate. And I think
right.
if you go back 50 years, I don't even know if all the brothers are even 50 years of age. But
correct.
The point is your father began a business from nothing. Nothing.
He did. He did. You know, Hezzy,
and,
my father,
and,
as you know, he was renamed on South Broadway. He was a stand-up man, and if you drive on South Broadway next to the Broadway Diner, there's his name, Milan Nuko Way.
Right.
And to your point,
right.
he came to this country, total cliche story, had not had any money in his pocket and worked his tail off and worked
right.
on the streets and made his own. And, you know, and hey, you know, he's not the only one. Tons of people have come to this country and still come to this country today with not a dollar in their pocket, and they have to work hard
right.
for what they do. But when they achieve that milestone in their life, when they have that ability to say, hey, I made it. I purchased my apartment. I purchased my home. I made this
yeah.
accomplishment in my life. And
I educated my kids.
I educated my kids. I supported my family. I made it to this level. And all of a sudden,
yep.
you know, you're frowned upon because you own real estate. I mean, who are mm. we? Where are our Apple owners and hedge fund owners and Amazons and all
yeah.
and all these guys, the doctors, lawyers? They're not allowed to make a living. They're not allowed to buy a home. They're not allowed to educate their children. I mean, you know, look,
we have all these vehicles in place.
Go ahead.
They're going to allow the Amazons of the world to make a living, and they're not cutting anybody's salary, and a very, very well-to-do. They ease take off a lot of the taxes that other people have to pay. But at the end of the day, you didn't come from wealth, and most people didn't come from wealth. And you built it on the back of your parents or their parents and so on and so forth. And
right.
that's fine. But that doesn't mean anyone, because of this debacle that we have informed by COVID-19, should have to suffer with a lack of equity. So if you're going to have to suffer, why doesn't anybody else have to suffer? And that is supposedly the American way. So what happened?
Right.
Where did we go wrong?
I don't know. I don't get it either. But I'll tell you this. You know, here we have an eviction moratorium that was extended to the end of August, which quite frankly
yeah.
should have never been extended. The only reason why they extended it, I'm not sure if you know the details, is that they wanted OTIDA, which is the Office of Temporary and Disability Assistance. They
okay.
are responsible for creating this new big allocated monies that are coming from the federal government. They're giving us over $2 billion to pay
okay.
for tenants' rent and whatnot. So what they wanted
uh-huh.
to do is they wanted OTIDA to set up this platform and have it in place, so that way, ideally, tenants could apply and get accepted or approved for these funds that could presumably pay rent for several months. Now, here's the irony
okay.
of this one. last year we had the COVID relief program that was offered, and we said that we had $100 million to use, of which only 40 of that 100 was actually spent. We, as property managers, exhausted so much time and effort, connected with so many tenants, educated them, gave them the applications, you know, held their hand, tried to do the best that we can to get them the assistance that was allegedly being offered, to only find out that they were getting denied left and right, and then you find out that this whole, that the whole process was a complete failure. So now, you know, here we are winding down at the end of 2020 with this COVID relief program that did not work, and then we start the new year off saying, hey, well, now we're going to have, you know, $2+ billion worth of funding. And, you know, we've been hearing about this for 5 months with like a carrot dangling in front of us, yet landlords are continuously trying to figure it out and waiting for the for this funding. Now we extend the moratorium so that way they could set up this program for tenants to presumably reapply again. It's supposed to be, quote-unquote, supposed to be easier. So that's what the extension moratorium was about. But I want to point out that there was never a need for this extension, and specifically because we already have plenty of safeguards in place for our tenants. For example, we have the CDC eviction moratorium, which is from the federal government, that is set to expire at the end of June. Last I checked, we're in May. Secondly, we have the Emergency Housing and Foreclosure Protection Act of 2020 that requires landlords to provide certain documentation to tenants, one of which is specifically a hardship declaration form. And if that tenant signed the hardship declaration form, basically attesting that they actually did suffer financial hardship, that would prevent them from getting evicted. And now putting all those things aside, and prior to COVID, anyone has ever walked into a normal landlord-tenant courtroom, you would know that it's not a 50-50 split, meaning that it's not 100% equally fair. It's always about 35% to the landlord and 65% pro-tenant. Why? Because...
Yeah, but you have to... I understand that. You know, the problem resides in what we spoke about before. If all of this is in silence, then that's exactly what happens where we are today. All because it happened in silence. If you talk behind closed doors at the you know, places of government, that's exactly where it's going to go. And then they call up to ask you, you know, if you abide by this atrocity of the law, because they don't know what to do. They don't know what to say to the people that are going to be affected, because they can't tell them the truth. They're embarrassed by their behavior. It's really what it boils down to. It's their embarrassment that comes into play.
But they need your funding. They need your funding for their campaign.
They need your funding. That's why they call you and say, oh, Mr. Nuko, will you be okay even though it's not the right thing to do? I still need your support. Will you still be there by my side? And then they expect you to say, oh, yeah, sure.
our rebuttal is help us collect our rent. Help us collect our rent, and we'll gladly use that money to help your campaign. But they don't do that.
Okay, I hate to put you on the spot, and I don't want an answer. Is that what you tell them? Because if you don't, you're making a mistake. And if you do tell them, you should call up every landlord and tell them to do exactly the same thing. And then you should make sure not to pay your taxes, and then we'll see where it goes. You find that in a court, and I guarantee you, I'll get you the best lawyer in town, the best, and they will fight for you, because that's the way it's done. And same thing goes with group organizations that do absolutely nothing but get paid. Big operation of doing nothing. Talk, but nothing. Again, nothing. Yes. Everywhere you look, afraid of telling it the way it is. And that's the problem. We're not going to resolve it by talking about it, but rather by putting an end to it before it begins, by letting the people know what's happening. And that's what they don't know. And that's why, to be honest with you, I'm successful, because I'm telling it the way it is and not the way people want to hear it. And I'm sorry if they're embarrassed. I'm not embarrassed by being smart enough to realize what's going on. And that's the problem. Our public, it's not that they're stupid. They don't have the facts by which to make a judgment call. And if they knew what was, I think that they would be on your side and recognize
right.
that if you don't get paid, they won't. And
right.
That's the deal. Can you imagine if a teacher doesn't pay and they can't earn a living, who's going to pay them? How are they going to pay
right.
their rent?
How about our firemen and our police officers? You know,
yeah. Fire the lot of them. We can't afford cops because we don't have money.
Right.
So who's going to protect
right.
us? Who's going to put out the fire if we can't afford firefighters? Who do you think is paying this if not you? You're not the
only one.
Don't get me wrong. There are
there are
individuals that pay rent too. I mean, not rent. They pay taxes.
Right.
But without
there's
no backbone.
We lean on the government to just continuously print paper that and fund these programs, the stimulus, this rent program that OTIDA is putting together. But in the end, you know, if you start looking at some of Biden's proposed tax plan, he's going to raise the taxes on individuals and corporations naturally. I mean, that seems to be
mm-hmm.
like the normal, you
that's
know, reaction.
Yeah,
that's what
yeah.
he's planning. He wants to place a cap on the 1031 exchange program of up to $500,000. So what that means mm-hmm. is that if you purchase a property for $100,000 and somehow down the line it was worth $10 million, that you would be charged tax from $10 million minus 100, okay, and then cap that $500,000. So you would pay, you know, whatever it is, $9.5 million worth of taxes. And
mm-hmm.
he's also removing step-up basis on the properties from when folks pass away. So if a situation where your parents purchase a property in the 70s or 50s and they paid $100,000 for it and they pass and they leave it to you, that basis that they had for all those years becomes your basis, and it doesn't get readjusted to market value. So that is how you know, some of Biden's proposed tax plans are directly attacking the real estate industry. So here we go.
Mm-hmm.
Add more insult to injury. We have, you know, our, you know, beautiful rent reforms and all the things that happened in between, and COVID and the eviction moratorium, or we could call it the rent moratorium because that's really what's happening anyway. And then you have
mm-hmm.
this at the end. So once again, Donald Trump is going to be responsible to pay all these, but no one seems to realize that it's not Donald Trump. It's that it's a normal family that may have a piece of real estate. I mean, I know so many people that come to us here and they look for help. They look for a voice because they may not know how to navigate or understand a lot of the things that go on
mm-hmm.
in this industry. And I can't begin to tell you how many times, Hezzy, I'm speaking to a property owner that may live in a three-family apartment building. They live in one unit, and they're renting the other two, right? Seems quite
uh-huh.
logical, very – and they're not
well,
collecting
you know
rent
what? We
from
can
the
be
two
crying
units.
For everybody's story. The problem
right.
is these laws passed while everybody was watching in silence. And you know what? You can – and over again, it's going nowhere. You're not going to get anybody crying for you because the bottom line is to stand the dynamic of this process. And that's the problem. And we
right.
permit it, and we continue to permit it, and we elect the same people who really mess it up for everybody. You know why? Because they're just wannabes. They want to be in that place. They want to be a politician. Do they have
right.
the intellectual capacity to do their job? The answer, I hate to tell you, is no. 100%
right.
no. You show me somebody who understands finances in government, and I will die because I've never seen it.
Here's another way to look at
there.
It. Right.
Yeah.
Another thought, Hezzy, is that some of these politicians, and I'm afraid to tell you this, they do understand it. They're lawyers, but they choose to go the other way and say the nonsense that people want to hear to advance their political career. And look,
correct.
I get it.
That's
it's
right.
politics. and it's a cutthroat, nasty business. But and I'm not one to be in the political circle. I never was one. But you know, when this is something that is just blatantly obvious, that completely affects not me personally, it affects everyone. Because when we go back to the top of this podcast, and we
politics.
Said everything
that is politics.
Everything is real estate.
That is
right.
That is politics. You're talking politics. Where else are you coming from? Where's the passion if it's not because of politics? Because you understand the realm of real estate. And that
right.
is all politics. You didn't get here because you were messing around with a system from 70 years ago. But somebody
right.
else did. And this is
right.
where you are. But there was a little bit of room. A wiggle room where, okay, it was a great investment at one time, and
sure.
that's fine. Now it's falling apart, but we don't have a replacement. So without a replacement, we're just destroying ourselves. That's the point.
Yes.
How is anybody
Absolutely.
Going to survive, or are we all going to starve?
Yeah, it is unfortunately the case, and we all need to get back to the drawing board here and rewrite this story for New York specifically. I have friends that work in the lending institutions, and they are
uh-huh.
lending money hand over fist to other areas of the world other than New York because nothing is happening in New York. New York is deteriorating rapidly. Our homelessness is increasing. Our job unemployment rates
right.
are going up. This is all, you know, when New York is back,
that's what people need to hear.
Right. You know, how many
people
have left? Right. People have left New York City, okay? And
uh-huh.
they're not returning. They're not returning the way they once were. All those office buildings where you had a company that occupied 10,000 square feet of office space, they're not going to need to come back and reoccupy that 10,000 square feet. Maybe
no,
they won't
not.
Need it at all, but if anything, they got to take a smaller portion, maybe a quarter or a third. Why? Because everybody has noticed that we could do the same thing at home being on Zoom. So why does anybody
right.
need to rent high-end apartments on the water by the train if they no longer need to commute to New York anymore? So now you're going to have empty buildings, deteriorating assets, which means that people aren't going to be employed to maintain those assets. And here we
uh-huh.
go again. We're going to go round and round. And we got those politicians that think that they're doing God's work because, yes.
Yeah, but the point is the planning, for example, based on what we were informed by, which is by COVID-19, destroys even making a $28 billion investment in Metro North? For who?
Mm-hmm.
For 10% of the ridership? You know, they could stay at home. And then we don't have to invest that money.
And then they'll just
But then they don't
want to
put those people out of a job. Is that the problem? Oh, so
right.
maybe that's the reason we're going to make an investment. We're going to print money and make believe
right.
that it's going to be worthwhile. But how come, again, everybody else is making money and you're not? I'm not crying for you. I'm just simply saying the whole system, and
Absolutely.
We broke it.
We did.
That's
we did. And now it's our obligation to fix it. Otherwise, we're going to see.
You got it.
We're going to see our state deteriorate and our housing stock. And we're going to unfortunately see more catastrophic events. You know, that fire that I spoke of, you're going to see more of
yeah.
that because, you know, properties are going to start collapsing. Roof is going to start caving in. Landlords are going to
yeah,
say, yes.
I'm sure that a lot of people are going to put their building on fire in order to collect the insurance.
Oh, boy.
Hey,
I hope.
That's the way it's going
mean,
to happen.
We can't be naive. Yeah, we can't be
no,
naive,
we can't
right?
be. That's the reality. And then I
right.
wouldn't be surprised if somebody picks up and says, oh, you know what? I'm going to move down to Florida or I'm going to move to some other country, whatever. That's
and then
how
here
we
you
go.
Go.
No,
and
I
has
one he... mistake. Go ahead.
Sure.
Sorry.
I was going to mention that, you know, you have developers that were historically building brand new apartment buildings. That has all stopped
uh-huh.
because now
yes.
to add another layer to this, they're talking about universal rent control only in New York, only in New York, universal rent control. Why?
We're going to have to do another show to get that because we've got less than 90 seconds. But what I forgot
sure.
to do before was to mention that you're Mike Nuko. You're the founder, the president, and the principal of the real estate brokerage firm known as New Realty Advisors, Inc. So,
thank you. I also represent Gem Management Partners with my two brothers, George and Edward Nuco, as well. That's our property management firm that we manage multifamily apartment buildings throughout Yonkers. So thank you,
right.
Hezzy, so much for this opportunity. I hope so.
Well, we've got to do this again.
Yeah, we're going to have a party next time.
Well, who knows? You know what we could do is we could always invite Andrea Stewart Cousins. I don't know if she'll respond to me, but I'm sure she'll respond to you. So give her a call. And or we should really bring a couple of politicians, to talk about it. You could talk to them privately, but they really need to come up with some solutions, and they can't
right.
hide behind the old litany. It's tiring
yeah.
already.
And they can't. They cannot use COVID as an excuse. They can't use COVID
no.
as an excuse. So,
true.
Well, look.
All right.
Yeah, I appreciate you.
10 seconds.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, and we'll speak again. All the best
thank
to you,
you
and your family.
You too, and be well.
Thank you.
Thank you, buddy.
You
okay,
too. Bye. Well, there we are, folks. We got to go, and they're going to shut us down anyway because that's what the system does. You know, we've only allocated 2 hours. That's it. Well, take care and have a great day. Goodbye.